land of America and the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. By the way, happy birthday to Brad Willis, Glendale, Arizona. 40 years old today. He says, I'll be listening. I promise. You got it. 10-year listener to Coast AM. Here's what's happening. As authorities in New York and Washington stepped up security, and Vice President Joe Biden told morning news shows that intelligence officials had information from a credible source that terrorists intend to enter the U.S. in advance of the 9/11 anniversary Sunday and attack targets using a car bomb. The FBI has set up a dedicated cell in its Washington, D.C. Operations Center to monitor information about terrorists using a car bomb to attack sites in New York and or Washington, D.C. Intelligence officials say they don't have specific names or fragments of names of the potential attackers. Doug Hagman, who monitors these situations for us on the line. Doug, do we know what they know? What's going on?
Well, hi, George. I think that we know, obviously, a little bit less than they know, of course. They do know that they're looking for at least three individuals. They believe three individuals or three cells. Now, that the initial reports came out where there were three people, two from Pakistan, one from the United States. Now, it looks like it might be, according to them, it might be more than that. And, of course, according to the intelligence, they had gleaned from a Pakistani source as well as some other sources is the fact that they were planning on using vehicle-borne improvised explosive devices in Washington, in New York, as well as perhaps Western cities and cities in the Midwest, which is something that we had not heard publicly before.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, their intent is to coordinate these attacks along with the memorial services that would be held on 9/11. So it's kind of an interesting plot, and that's in essence, that's the core plot that they're looking at.
Now, of course, Doug, as you know, this is something we should be alert for all the time. This being the anniversary of 9/11, of course, the heightened concern these days. But the bottom line is, it's very difficult to stop these kinds of acts, isn't it?
In a free society, as we've seen, it's virtually impossible, even with the heightened security, unless you've got complete and total control over the entire flow of people to and from a certain area or all areas, which is not going to happen. I just don't think that Americans will tolerate that, certainly. Indeed, something like this could very well happen, at least in one or two places. And there's really not a whole lot we could do about it. And I think New Yorkers have realized that over the last 10 years and have really become resilient to these threats that we hear all the time.
Okay, well, let's pray we get through this weekend at least, Doug. Thank you so much. The power was back on in almost all of Arizona and Southern California the day after a massive power outage that left millions of people in the dark for hours. However, the effects of the outage lingered as San Diego schools took the day off and health officials warned swimmers off some beaches over concerns about a sewage spill caused by the outage. Precisely what caused the blackout wasn't entirely clear, but they say it definitely was not terrorism. The outage appeared to begin with some work at a Yuma, Arizona substation that routes power to California. The market ended this holiday shortened week the same way it started, in a free fall over concerns about Europe, the Dow tumbling 304 points. Bank America considering cutting at least 10% of its workforce as part of a massive restructuring. The Wall Street Journal said the officials at the Charlotte, North Carolina bank have discussed cutting 40,000 employees, or 14%, of the bank's 288,000 staff. A Florida woman who claimed to be a vampire attacked an elderly man, biting him on the face and arm and tearing away chunks of his skin. The 22-year-old woman, Josephine Smith, was arrested, charged with felony aggravated battery on an elderly person. She says, I'm a vampire, I'm going to eat you, before she attacked Milton Ellis. Dreams can relate the potential future, and unlike our physical body, which is bound by the law of physics and the dimensions of time and space, the subconscious mind is governed by the freedom of the laws of metaphysics, which goes beyond physical limitations. The subconscious mind can perceive the probable future by following a stream of conscious forward. Up next, David Rubin joins us as we'll talk about dreams that have changed the world. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and he's back on Coast to Coast. David Rubin, host of Extreme Results Radio, works with a number of people, Fortune 500 CEOs and some Hollywood folks, as well as personal and professional people, as a mentor, coach, and dream decoder, having experienced a three-day-long OBE, out-of-body experience, and three life-altering lucid dreams. David is an expert on intuition development and navigating lucid, prophetic, and terrorizing dream experiences, and we're going to talk with him about that tonight on Coast to Coast. David, welcome back. How are you?
George, it's a great pleasure. I'm great. Thank you.
Looking forward to this. Your specialty would be what? Lucid dreaming, precognitive? What would you say?
I would say just about anything in the realm of dreams because of my experiences over decades. Powerful dreams that I've had that literally have changed the course of my life, including one dream in which I was shown the death of one of my own children. And I woke up from this dream crying, and I related this to my wife, and I said, I can't imagine living if this happens. Exactly 3 days later, the very vision that I saw in the dream unfolded in reality, except for one thing. I was aware of exactly what was going to happen, so I was able to change the future. I pulled the child that was going to get run over by my own car back in because I knew that if I didn't, it was an instinctive knowing, I knew that if I didn't, that child would die, and I saved his life.
It is miraculous. You have talked about the collective consciousness for a long, long time. Exactly what is that?
The collective consciousness is the human race. And, you know, the scientists are now studying the way that people communicate. And they are comparing the human race to the way, in a sense, that ants communicate as a civilization, in a sense, as a group. And so they did studies, and they found that if you had four people in a room of 200, that if those four people started to go in a direction that was even not in the best interest of the group, but if they were very, very powerfully adamant that they would go in this particular direction that was not in the best interest of the group, that ultimately the entire group would end up following those four people and doing the very same thing. So the collective consciousness has to do with people being influenced by subtle, external, constant images, messages, suggestions. You might even call it hypnotic suggestions that make us really believe that what we are taking in from the outside world is our own idea, when in fact we are being subtly I heard what you were saying before you started the show. Will the government ever allow us to see the evidence they have on UFOs? No, they won't. They'll keep telling us that there is no such thing. So they'll continue in the face of evidence to tell us that it's not true. And they know that at some level we are compelled to believe them because we have not found power over our own minds completely yet. Most of us live in a semi-hypnotic state, and it keeps us from being fully free to see ultimately our own future and to be able to see collectively the future that we wish to have come into existence as a country, as a group of people. We are held down by very subtle and overt means, mostly conditioning, suggestions, and hypnosis.
How powerful, David, are precognitive dreams?
Well, precognitive dreams are, I suppose you would say that throughout history, those dreams, including the Joseph, when he was called by the Pharaoh, because he had heard that Joseph in the Bible knew how to interpret dreams. Joseph saw 7 years of plenty and 7 years of hard times for Egypt. How could he see? How could he know this? And it actually came true, according to the Bible. People who have the ability to transcend the limitations of their conscious mind and go into their superconscious mind, well, there's no limitations in the superconscious mind. It is above the three-dimensional world that we live in. And so what I'm saying is that, in a sense, the superconscious mind is within everyone, but people have not tapped into it yet. Most people allow other people to make decisions for them. In other words, we're brought up in a world in which we are immediately made to be codependent on authority figures, on our parents, on our teachers. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but what I'm saying is people do not encourage little children when they have visions, when they think there's something under the bed, they always say, oh, that's your imagination. But what if they did see something? What if they sensed something and they didn't know how to deal with it? Why do children get scared and they run to their parents for protection? What are they seeing that the parents aren't seeing? That's the question. I'm saying we all have the ability. Our superconscious mind is waiting for us to discover it. And we all have the ability to see the future. We have the ability to change the future, as Joseph did, by being able to transcend the limitations of his conscious mind. And throughout history, I mean, Abraham Lincoln saw his own death in a dream. He did not choose to change that course of destiny. So I will say that it is the most powerful experience a human being can have, to have a precognitive dream. The one I had saved a life. And I'm wondering on this this anniversary, 10 years after the tragedy of 9/11, I'm wondering how many people had precognitive dreams about just such a tragedy occurring. But nobody was there to hear that person say, I had a vision. You see, we don't do that anymore. We used to rely entirely upon visionaries. People did. Now, was that a good thing? Maybe not. I mean, maybe those visionaries were in it for their own, you know, benefit, and they didn't really have visions, and they just told people what they thought would be the best thing for them to believe. But the fact is that we still have people who are visionaries. You, George, you are a visionary. I know you are. And as a result of something that happened with you, I started this project called We See the Future. Because you were on a program called Ancient Aliens. It's one of my favorite shows.
Right.
They were talking about prophecy, and you were talking about the power of prophecy in the ancient times. And I realized we have not started to keep track of the visions that people are having. There's no register. There's no record of it. So I created this website so that everyone can begin to make a record of the things that they're seeing. Now, we can collate that information, and we can begin to compare how many people are having similar visions. And potentially, as in the days of old, potentially, we can avert tragedies and change the world for the better.
My daughter, David, had one of these precognitive dreams about 9/11, but she didn't know what it was. She knew she was in a city, and she knew there were skyscrapers, but what she saw was like ash and rubble falling to the ground. She was standing, she said, in about 3 to 6 inches of ash, and then she saw, you know, things falling from the sky, ash. She never saw any planes. She thought there was some kind of volcano or something next to a big city, like the caldera in Yellowstone. So she had it. She knew something had happened on that day because she dreamed it the night before. The next day she was telling me after she called and woke me up to tell me about these plane crashes into the buildings. But she just didn't know exactly what it was, and she thought it was a volcano.
You know, that is so powerful. I mean, because there are so many people who have those kinds of experiences. And again, you've really nailed it. People don't know what to do with it. Now, that's a problem. And we have to begin to start taking these paranormal experiences to the next level. We need to begin to quantify the information. We need to begin to measure it and see how many people are getting hits. You know, SETI's out there, and they've aimed these giant satellites to the sky, and they're looking for any signal. We're getting signals all the time, individually and collectively. If only there was some place where your daughter could have said, I had a dream, and not be ridiculed, by the way, because remember, when
That's
people
right.
first started talking about UFOs, you know, the pilots were afraid to say anything when they saw something in the sky. People that had abduction experiences were made to look like they were crazy. You know what? I think that we've got to stop all that right now, because our future depends upon us becoming realistic about the superconscious mind. But that's something else now, because, you know, people have to reach up into that superconscious mind. They have to find a place where they're comfortable dealing with the images, the visions that they're going to have, and they have to have a place that reinforces or validates that they aren't just having hallucinations, or, you know, that they're not crazy, that they're actually, there's actually something happening here of great significance.
David, I've got my thoughts on how this happens, why this happens, but I want your take on it. What do you think this is?
Okay. Well, I think that it is that, to use sort of an example of the movie Avatar, where the scientist was looking at how the forest had a connective relationship with everything around it, the trees mm-hmm. and the flowers, and everything on that planet was connected together. And the older I get, the more I really, really believe that, in fact, we are all connected. I think it is on a metaphysical level and a physical level, because, you know, you can tell a lot about a person by their body language. They don't have to say a word to you. But when somebody's frustrated or angry or upset, you can see it. When somebody's happy, you can see it. I mean, we have intuition. We have the ability to see something and know what it is without trying to figure it out, without reasoning it all out. And so I believe that we're looking at the collective mind, and we don't see it because we all think, well, individuality is so important. You know, wouldn't it be kind of odd to, I know that people talk about, I've heard a lot of information about identical twins who think the same thoughts at the same time. They even speak at the same time. So people think, well, if I'm having a similar thought, or if I'm sharing information that other people are thinking about, and we're all thinking about it at the same time, I think that they're threatened in that sense, that that's de-individualizing. But it isn't. In fact, it is, in my belief is that it's one of the highest levels of consciousness you can achieve, to be in a place where you're seeing what other people are seeing on the same level that they're seeing it. But, you know, remember in the American Indian tribes, they had sweat lodges, and they would go in, and they would do these rituals, and they would look for their spirit guide.
That's right.
And so, but see, we don't have any way of reconnecting to this higher superconscious mind that we have. It's instinctive in us. Intuition and the superconscious mind are part of our everyday life, but we, like a muscle, we haven't used it, and so it's atrophied. And so what we have to do is we have to start building a relationship with that superconscious mind. We're already all aware of our subconscious mind, because we can hear the back talk in the back of our head. It's the chatter that we hear as we go through the day, and our regular consciousness picks up the people around us, and we start to reflect the world that we live in, and we become the effect of a cause. And so when I say that people are influenced, if you think about what I'm saying, being the effect of a cause means that in a strange way, even though you want to believe that you're an individual, you're part of a number of people that is being affected, like thousands if not millions of other people. When a president gives a speech on television, when a plane crashes into a building, we all feel that shockwave. We feel it in our own way, but we all have similar feelings. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely, David. And I call this, and I've always called it, the wireless internet out there in the universe, where, just like you said, everybody's connected, everybody's together. In this case, it's wireless. Pretty close?
Absolutely right. Absolutely. And look, that's the ether, though. You know, whales are able to communicate hundreds and hundreds of miles through water, because water is an amazing carrier of sound. Think of the metaphysical superconscious as an ether that carries thought, ideas, power, energy, awareness throughout an entire universe. You know, I was watching another program, Ancient Aliens, last night on the plagues and diseases. And one of the interesting things about the program was what they said about the Spanish flu that occurred around 1917, I believe it was, 1916. It was the year after the three children saw the Blessed Mary at Fatima.
That's right. Hold on for one second, David. We're going to talk about that when we come right back. On Coast to Coast AM, two special hours tonight with David Rubin. Calls next hour as we talk about dreams. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with David Rubin as we talk about dreams. David, you were talking about Fatima, Portugal. Tell me about that.
Yeah, what happened is this was this great show, Ancient Aliens, and they were talking about the spread of plagues, and they were wondering, you know, where do these plagues come from? Could they be extraterrestrial in origin? And interestingly enough, 1 year after the event at Fatima, 1 year almost to the day, the Spanish flu broke out and spread around the entire world almost instantaneously. And so they're wondering, how was that possible? How was it possible for the flu to affect and kill 50 million people immediately? You know, usually contagions take a while to spread, but this happened all at once. And so if it can happen with something as innocuous as a virus or as deadly as a virus, it can also happen with consciousness. And so, but the question is, are we tuned in? See, I think that the average person is not tuned in. I think the average person is tuned out, and they don't even know they're tuned out. They think that if they watch the news, like I know a lot of people like to watch morning chat shows, and, you know, that they'd have their coffee, and then they get up and go to work, and they live these lives, and it's almost like the Truman Show to me. You know, everybody knows it's a TV show but them. And everybody knows that there is a larger consciousness, and there's so much more to life than they can ever, ever dream or imagine, but they can't dream. They can't have those dreams. As a matter of fact, people take sleeping aids, you know, sleeping pills and all kinds of things so that they can just go to sleep. But I'm saying we live a full third of our life with our eyes closed, and there's a reason for that. And that's because in our conscious life, in our waking moments, we are led through the world by the influences of the world. We have to have a job. We have to do, you know, our taxes. We have to drive to work. We have to pick up the kids from school. There's 100 different things we have to do every day. And so those things are the things of our physical and our exterior life. But the things of our internal life, the things of our superconscious mind or our subconscious mind, by the way, the difference between the superconscious mind is that that is where the things of awakening come from, and our subconscious mind are where the things of the darkness come from. So when we have dark dreams and when we have fearful visions, that's coming from below. Now, it could be that the things that are coming from below are there and they're designed to scare us and awaken us to seek and understand, why am I having these nightmares? Why do I have these fears? But a lot of people just medicate. And what we do is we anesthetize ourselves. We do anything we can to avoid the message from the dream, from the nightmare. We do anything we can. You know, even Job in the Bible, if I'm not mistaken, he was told to go deliver a message. And he didn't want to because he was afraid of what would happen. I think a lot of us have come to that place in our life where we have seen things that are important and that we need to share these things with other people, but we're afraid of what they will say. We're afraid of what people will do, how they will react to us. I think people live in a state of abject fear.
Yeah, maybe so. Now, tell us some of the examples, if you would, David, of dreams that have changed the world.
Well, we know there are the classics like Abraham Lincoln. We know that Gene Dixon foresaw the assassination of JFK. Many of the great military leaders, Genghis Khan, George Patton, Julius Caesar, Hannibal, were influenced by dreams and acted on those dreams, and those dreams were influential in helping them win wars. As a matter of fact, Hitler had a dream, and he was going to invade England, I believe, and a dream told him that he would lose, and so he didn't invade England, and England won the war. Gandhi had a dream. And, you know, Mary Shelley had a dream and she had a horrible nightmare, and it ended up being the Frankenstein story that we know today. there's so many people. Orson Welles, Frederick Handel, George Frederick Handel. The Messiah was dreamed up and brought to life. There's just no end to it. How many people have had dreams that have changed their life? It's replete in every aspect of our human culture, on every level, from the jungles of the furthest ancient forests to the skyscrapers in Manhattan. People are dreaming every day, and those dreams, if they were understood, could be turned into a tomorrow that is more incredible than anyone could ever imagine. But they're not paying attention. People are not paying attention.
50.4% of the people surveyed, David, say that they reported having precognitive dreams. That's pretty high as far as I'm concerned.
I didn't even realize that it was that high. I think that that is a very significant number because, look, the stigma is slowly but surely of the people having paranormal experiences, the stigma is beginning to go away. We're beginning to accept that there are forces and there are, I don't know, entities, if you want to call it that, that even though we cannot explain them, it doesn't mean we should either try to forget about them or relegate them to the crazy bin. This is not crazy. What's crazy is not to pay attention. What's crazy is not to give credence to these visions that people are having. When I deal with dreams, and I do it on the phone, I have people that tell me the nightmares that they have. But the symbolism of the nightmare, it paints a very good picture. You know, Nostradamus, again, visions. Swedenborg, Emanuel Swedenborg, he had these experiences where he would be taken up into different levels of heaven and hell. There are people who have had, like Edgar Cayce, for example, would have visions, and he would be pretty accurate in his diagnosis. Even today, scientists marvel at how accurate Edgar Cayce was with his diagnosis. But with our own lives, I think that we tend to look to other people for the meanings. And see, I think we have to be our own dream decoder. I think we have to learn how to be aware enough and understand. People have to write down their dreams. They have to contemplate their dreams, and they have to remove their emotional filters, because the emotional filters are what keep us from looking at what the dream is trying to tell us. It may be warning us in such a way as to save our lives. Many dreams do. It may be telling us a way towards success. But you see, success also brings with it tremendous responsibility. And so there are dreams that lead you to other levels of dreaming.
You know, I've always asked myself, David, that if one dies, what's it like on the other side? What happens? And I'm beginning to conclude that, assuming there is life after death, and I believe that, that it could be like the dream state for a while, that you just merely, let's say you die in your sleep, I think that your entity, your consciousness, continues on, but in some kind of dream state, and it may not even be aware that the body is dead. What do you think of that?
I absolutely concur with you. Having looked at this for over 30 years and having interviewed all of the top researchers on the topic of life after death, I have concluded also that I think that we do not cease to exist. Now, there's no one who has ever been dead long enough to have those experiences and then come back and tell us the whole story.
Right.
But we do have bits and pieces of this picture. Some of those stories that come back to us are very horrifying. Some of them are, I mean, many of them are very beautiful. I think that it depends upon what it is that we want to believe. And, like, I have a relative who doesn't believe in life after death. He just thinks that when he's gone, that's the end of it. The lights go out. There's no more. But see, maybe there's nothing there for him because that's what he wants to believe. So, again, I think we have to be careful what we ask for, because we might just get it. So if we don't want anything anything further than this. I don't want to ever stop. Do you?
No.
I want to go on. I want to go to the undiscovered country. And I think I've lived almost my whole life with that kind of thought ever since I was 13 years old when I had a three-day-long out-of-body experience. I popped out of my body, and I was tethered like a balloon, and I was dragged around by this body that looked like me. And I watched myself talk and interact with people in school, and then I came back and I realized I am not my body. And I realized something else more important, that I'm not necessarily dependent upon my body for the rest of eternity. Now, see, most people don't have that perspective yet. They still think that the body or the vehicle is the sort of the primary cause of life. But ultimately, this is our receiver. This is our tuner. This is our PC. We can collate information. We can have experiences. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you about lucid dreamers as time travelers because, see, if you think about it, doctors are now performing surgeries from across the globe on the battlefield with the advent of modern technology. They're able to literally use robotic arms to do very, very precise surgery.
Sure.
They've actually been able to cross a boundary that existed for so long that they don't have to be there in person. The lucid dreamer who goes beyond the limitations of their conscious mind, it can become a time travel experience in the sense that you become a witness, like I did. I was a witness, even though it was only 3 days in the future. It was 3 days that I saw ahead. And so being forewarned, I knew what was going to happen, and I changed it. I already knew how to change it. I already knew what the remedy was. It was instantaneous. But people have gone thousands of years as a witness into the future. You don't have to be there in your body because your body is just like your car. You have to take your car everywhere you go. Do you take it up to your office when you get to work? You leave it where it is. When we lay down in that bed, we leave our vehicle, and we are free. We are free. But most people don't understand that yet because what's happening is the pressure of their life, their everyday life, is still pushing in on them. And it's Memorex. We've recorded the arguments we've had. We think about what we have to do tomorrow. We have all of this script in our head. We have a story that we're writing about our life, and we keep playing it. When our eyes close, it just continues. It doesn't stop. But it's supposed to. That's where we're supposed to draw the line on our daily life and start beginning of our nightlife. And our nightlife is where we can move from one place to another unrestricted without any limitations. But there's a dark side to that because people go into the world of fantasy and they go down into that world and, you know, it becomes like Pleasure Island,
yeah.
You know, in Pinocchio. They can go down there and they can do anything they want in their fantasies. But I'm not interested in that part of it because I know that that is really only temporary sort of gratification, whatever, ego gratification. I've gone beyond that, and I learned from going through experiences and having dying in the hospital. I died. They over-medicated me. I had atrial fibrillation, which is a disease that's called the silent killer.
Oh, yeah. That's when your heart beats like 150 times a minute, right?
It actually can go up to 300.
Oh.
And, you know, you can have terrible, terrible, terrible side effects. But I went into the hospital about 6 years ago. I had my heart was at about 180. So they put you on this medication that brings your heart rate down. But what happened was in the meantime, while I was sitting there, I was in the emergency room. An 80-year-old woman was in an absolutely horrifying car crash. Everyone in the ER rushed over because she was in this traction device because she was so broken. And they left me there for hours and hours and hours. So I went in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and at about 11 o'clock at night, I'm still in the ER. So I'm buzzing, buzzing, buzzing. What are you going to do with me? And the stuff is still dripping into me. I'm getting really, really tired. They said, well, we're going to keep you overnight for observation. They take me upstairs. They have a brand-new cardiac wing, two brand-new interns. And they're, it's a boy and a girl, and they're chatting, and they're chatting. And they've got this intravenous dripping, dripping, dripping. And I'm telling them, I feel like I'm going to die. I feel like I'm going to die. And all of a sudden, I went. And I heard every single thing that happened when I was dead. I heard them screaming, get this needle, put it there, this much. Got to get his heart beating.
Yeah.
I was almost like I was standing over their shoulders watching them, completely objective.
You might have been.
I'm telling you, I had no emotion. I had no feeling about it. I saw myself there. But I didn't. It didn't feel like me. That's the other thing. It never feels like you when you're out of it. It only feels like you when you're in it. So when you're out of it, and again, going back to the lucid dream, scientific researchers have done the brain scans, and they've come to this conclusion that the near-death experience, the lucid dream, and the out-of-body experience are almost exactly identical in the sense of how it affects the brain or the consciousness, however you want to define it. They're looking at the brain, but the effect on the brain is exactly the same, near-death, out-of-body experience, lucid dream. We are going into another place that we have not been while we were awake. And in that place, we find that we can see, that we still hear, that we still absorb information, that, in fact, we feel better than we've ever felt in our lives because we don't have any pain. We don't have any fear. We don't have any anxiety. We have nothing to think about. All the thoughts are temporarily removed. See, all the burden of thinking is temporarily removed.
See, I also think, David, that you can use your dreams to get things done in your life. If you go to sleep thinking of a project or whatever, whether it's a new job, a relationship, and just get it out there and let it go to work for you, there's a very good chance that it's going to get this done for you. Have you done that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it's a conversation I had with my 9-year-old son today and his karate instructor, because he's got all the right moves. But his karate instructor, who is a very famous guy, he said when I was when he was competing professionally, he had a deprivation tank, and what he would do is he would go into that deprivation tank and he would focus on how he was going to fight and what his moves were going to be. And I explained to my son, I said, let's put it on a practical level. I love snowboarding, and so when I watch people snowboarding on television, or when I think about, you know, myself, I have a vision of myself doing the things that I want to do. So, yes, it you know, thought precedes action. So you have to have it in your mind first. If it's not in your mind first, it can never manifest in the second place. And so in your dream, I have dreams of very few dreams, believe it or not, George. But with the dreams that I do have are so vivid and they're so powerful that sometimes I flip off my bed.
Yeah, I'm like you, David.
Reacting to that dream.
I'm the same way. Few dreams that I recollect, but the ones that I do are very powerful.
Yes, and those are messages that we generally say, "Okay, I've got to pay attention. What the heck just happened?"
Have you ever had one of those terrifying dreams, night terrors?
I had the worst. What do they call it? I was frozen.
Sleep paralysis.
I had it. And I think I talked about it on the last time I was on, but I'll just do a quick recap of it. I went to sleep this one night, and went to sleep very quickly. It usually takes me a little while to doze off. I found that this was during a time when I was having marital problems, and I hadn't had any conversation for 6 months with my spouse at the time. In the dream, I saw my wife. And she was smiling, and she came to me, and she put her arms around me and wanted to kiss me. But then my superconscious mind kicked in and said, something isn't right about this dream. You haven't even talked. We've been living in the same house, George, for 6 months, and no talking, not one word. And as soon as the reason in my mind kicked in, this image, it wasn't my wife at all. It was something from the dark side. I call it a life force sucking entity. And people have them. Some people call them succubuses. Some people call them incubuses. It depends upon, you know, it could be any number of dark things from the dark side, but this one was a worm, a huge worm with teeth that went all the way down into the stomach cavity. And it was like a vacuum cleaner trying to suck the life force out of me.
Well, that would scare the heck out of anybody. David, we're going to take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.